My name is Barry Cooper, C-O-O-O-P-E-R.
So I guess it probably should start with, you got the job.
Being born on Ezra Road and had an interest in cookery. So there was an advertisement for a job. I applied for it as an apprentice chef and I went to Skyline in 1963 and I was there until 1966.
Where was the job advertised?
In the Hull Daily Mail, as jobs were then.
And so you got the job?
Yes.
What were you doing there though? What was your main, what was your day-to-day, what was a typical day?
Right, as a typical day, I was one of a brigade of 8 or 10 apprentice chefs in the Skyline restaurant. And a typical day would be starting at 9 o'clock in the morning, split shift from 9 till 3, off from 3 till 6, and then 6 till 8, and that was 60 hours per week, every week, for about just over £3.76 as a starting wage. And they didn't pay overtime.
Was it contracted 60 hours then?
No, it was contracted 39 or 40, but having gone down to the accounts department on the second floor, I found out that they don't pay overtime and basically you've got to wing it because you weren't getting no overtime. And we worked Saturday nights, virtually every Saturday night on functions.
So how busy was the restaurant? How many covers were you doing?
Well, it's difficult to say, but one of the major things that I remember while I was there, under the group of chefs, apprentice chefs, we actually had a function for 1,000 people. Now, I'm not sure if 1,000 people arrived, ate and went, but we were catering on one event for 1,000 people.
What kind of things were you cooking?
Well, as an apprentice chef, you learnt everything from whatever is required, so pastry department, to butchery, to drawing chickens at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. By drawing, I meant cleaning chickens from the innards, and then going home for a bath, because that was the last job, invariably, because the corp that ran Skyline Ballroom had a farmer's market at Market Wheaton, and they used to provide chickens for the Skyline restaurant.
So when you were there then, what other functions were there, as opposed to...
Okay, so there was a dinner dance on a Saturday evening. Basically, we provided a dinner dance, a three-course meal for a Saturday evening. You also had what's called the Skyline restaurant. We also had what we call a Café de Paris, which is at the far right-hand side as you looked at it from the restaurant. And then we had the beer garden. That is a particular picture of me in the beer garden providing meals, what the class is, flambé. And basically, you are cooking steak in white wine sauce or red wine sauce or veal or whatever the customers required. And that was apparently the longest bar in Hull in the beer garden at that time.
So when you say beer garden, mm-hmm. How do you mean by beer garden? Because it doesn't look like it's out.
Well, that's what it wasn't. It was totally enclosed, but that's how they called it. They called it the beer garden. So we took food through there into the catering area, which is in the middle of that room. It didn't have many customers, and there was a bar in there, and it was enclosed.
Would you say, compared to nowadays, would you class it as fine dining there?
It was one upmarket from the restaurant. The restaurant was waitress service. That was waitress service, but basically they was trying to instigate a further type of venue with some extra trade coming in. That's how the lady took on. And that's how I was one of the chefs that actually went through that day and prepared food and photographs were taken.
So how expensive would you say it was there to eat there?
I can't remember the price, because to be fair, it wasn't very much. I suppose if you was to ask all the bar staff and the waitresses, I've brought a whole list of people that I know from there, who were waitress staff and whatever. I would guess it's something, the old money, about 1 and 6 or something like that. And that was probably for a three-course meal.
Do you still keep in touch with a lot of people you worked with?
I know one or two people that... there's a whole list of chefs that were apprentice chefs that were there at the time in the years that I was there. But I moved on, and there is a particular reason why I moved on. So there's about... there's the head waitress. She was the restaurant supervisor. She's locally, and one of the other apprentice chefs that I see quite regular. But a lot of the other people I never see. I've got a list of people, but I never actually come across them in any shape or form. There's one or two people. The head chef has just retired because he was the general manager of the Willoughby Manor Hotel, and he's just retired.
Have you always been a chef afterwards,
though? Yes, yeah. It gets me to the next part. When the Skyline restaurant was working at that time, they then decided to run what they call the Skyline Pantry, which was on the ground floor. So if you were to look at what we class as the old British Home Stores now, you went in through the front doors of the round area at the front, and there was a restaurant on the top. But before that restaurant was ever there, there was a pantry which was a delicatessen on one of the first in Hull. And that delicatessen was on the ground floor, so people would come in and buy their smoked salmon. And of course, that brings me to the story, is when, as an apprentice chef at Skyline, they started to do the delicatessen, and they had a great idea. The gentleman that was in charge of the restaurant was a gentleman called Latila, who was from Finland. And he had an idea of colluding with people from the Coop to run a delicatessen on the ground floor, I believe. They then employed a lady from Sweden, and that lady's there in the middle,
okay.
And Ingrid Nielsen. And the idea being was that we were supposed to, all the apprentice chefs were supposed to work with Ingrid in the kitchen and learn her skills. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. Because for whatever reason, when it got to my turn, that's it. She was having nobody else. But the story goes on. So Ingrid left. But before she left the restaurant and went back to Sweden, she asked me in very good broken Swedish, which I since learnt, that did I want a job on the ship that she came across on. So she started working on one of the three ships that at that time were part of the England-Sweden line. Ellerman Wilson, Spiro, Svea and the Saga. And she was on the Saga. Did I want a job? So from a weekly wage of something around about the £5 a week, yes please, £60 a week. So I went on that passenger ship between Hull and Sweden, and then eventually London and Sweden, on £60 a week for 5 years. I learnt Swedish. I learnt what she used to say to me in Swedish. And that was very interesting. But obviously, on these photographs that you see here, is some of the buffets that Ingrid put together with the restaurant manager, John Tisdale, who is a referee on my reference here, and some of these staff are British, well, most of them are. There's a head waiter there called Mr. Wilkes. Ingrid is on there, Betty Bearfield, head chefs and what have you, and Charlie. And then there's a photograph there of some of the other staff. So all these were a function in the Café de Paris that we actually produced for an evening function or what have you in the early days of having a buffet.
What were the different rooms then? As in the different restaurant parts?
Yeah, the main restaurant was with waitress service, and the Café de Paris was used like an extension to that. There was a bar in between that. The Café de Paris had an escalator going down to the, like some of the restaurants now, they have an escalator going down to the lower floor. Well, that had exactly the same thing. And then, of course, the beer garden was at the far end. So they was trying to bring about a different idea on catering and see how that worked, and using the venue for as much as they could for a private function or what have you.
Yeah.
And the one in the Café de Paris, I believe, I seem to remember, it had a revolving floor that was circular, so it went round and round and round.
Which floor was the actual restaurant on?
On the top floor. Everything was on the top floor, apart from the Café de, apart from the delicatessen, which was on the lower ground.
When it came to an evening function or something like that, mm-hmm. did the restaurant stay where it was?
Was the ballroom.
It was in the ballroom.
Yes, yeah. They used to move all the tables. The I believe the head barman, Mr. Alan Ladd, He used to, I believe it was him and other staff, who used to set the function up. And they actually had a, which was a bit crazy, they had a, actually had a staff dance being owned by Co-op. But unfortunately, in order to go to the staff dance, we had to be a member of the Co-op. So you had to go down and pay money to go to the Co-op, to go to the staff dance. But I remember there was all sorts of, behind the scenes, of course, there was all sorts of pop groups that came there, like a group called the Pretty Things, and all sorts of memorabilia that was been in the press that people have said that has appeared there. So,
I was going to say, did you go to anything?
No, no. Mostly we was in the back kitchen, and we didn't finish until 11 o'clock at night on a Saturday night. So we'd done a long, we'd done 6 hours on the Saturday up to 3 o'clock, off for 3 hours, then came back at 6 o'clock and finished at 11 on the last bus home. No, there was not much that we wanted to party, and we didn't have the money anyway. I mean, we could have sneaked out the door and watched them going on, but we were busy under the realms of the kitchen, so we were doing whatever we were asked to do.
So the restaurant was still running while events were on, but obviously not...
Intermittently, they'd just pull the tables back and there'd be just dance on there. And I believe, I seem to remember, I thought there was waiter service for the drinks as well. So that was some of the things that actually went on, I believe, in Hull at that time, which was maybe not heard of in other places.
And how did you find working there? Was it enjoyable?
Or? I loved it. Loved it. But the experience of going working on the Saga was another eye-opener. Oh, unbelievable, yeah. And that, I didn't know at the time that was such a trick of fortune, because from the age of 18, basically 5 years on the Swedish passion, you know, I earned a lot of money. So it was good, yeah. It was.
So what age were you when you started at Skyline then?
I was 15. Yeah.
Straight from school? Or?
Straight from school. Yeah, finished in the June and I was there about a week later.
Why you were there then? What was it like? What were the other people like with you?
Brilliant. We had a ball. We were 8 or 10 young youths. I used to come to work on what was called, one of the guy's chefs was, he had a Velocette, which was the old grey police motorbikes. He brought me to work. When I lived in Bouffer Estate, one of the gentlemen who was apprentice chef with me, Malcolm Sonley, his dad had a garage, and he bought off his dad a Austin 6 or Austin something or other, a little old fashioned car. He brought me to work. Next door neighbour used to be a maintenance gentleman, because they used to have maintenance crew for the whole of the Co-op places, the shops and the restaurant. So Jack Stevenson was one of the maintenance guys, the guy who lived next door. He was also a maintenance guy, and sometimes he'd bring me to work in an old Bedford van. But it was a wonderful experience to learn all the skills. But of course, when we were supposed to learn, because we went to day release at college to get CT and Gills. So part in the middle of the kitchen was a huge walk-in fridge. We're talking hindquarters and a forequarter of a beast. So you get the hindquarter and the forequarter, you've got a full cow, more or less, without what have you. So you get two forequarters, two hindquarters. We used to lift the hindquarters, bigger than what we were, onto the butchery bench and learn how to butcher, take the fillet steak out, the sirloin and all that. They don't do it now, it's all come pre-packed. Sometimes if you ask the chef how to fillet steak, he maybe wouldn't know how to take a fillet off a hind quarter. If you asked him to fillet a salmon, maybe he wouldn't know how to fillet a salmon. But we learnt everything, you know.
Was there actual training then, or was it just literally
on the job training? Yeah, basically at the end of the day, I'll show you how to do this, fine, go on, do it, basically.
Yeah.
So that was the way it was, you know. You couldn't say you had a training record and you ticked off you got a bag of peas or whatever. So,
and how many people do you think worked there then, in terms of the restaurant?
In the restaurant, I believe there was getting on for, there had to be getting along to learn about 20, 25 in the kitchen itself. And then you had front of end staff out in the waits, because the waitresses, some young, some not so young, would come through, obviously, for a particular meal for a customer table, 10 or what have you. And there would probably be another 10 on a daily basis. And then they're bringing part-time waiting staff on the evening for an evening function, and that might take up to about 30, depending what the ratio was per table. So they might have one waiter or waitress for three tables of 15 people in total, maybe, something along those lines. But our demarcation potentially was edge of the kitchen where the steel was. There was a brick wall there. It was all tiled out, shelves on there, where glasses on, God knows what. And basically, our demarcation was behind the hot plate, behind the kitchen, the back stairs, the delivery as well. We used to take the delivery.
What was the kitchens like then? Were they clean? Were they massive?
Oh yeah. Well, as modern as they could be, and massive, and everywhere was tiled. The floor was clean. It's a great place. A massive kitchen, really, in relation to, because some of the places that you might find now, it's the smallest room, that'll be the kitchen, and it's not big enough in any shape or form, and then it needs expanding, whereas this was quite a big area. And the back windows, they used to look onto Hull. Obviously, there were big windows, and there was a balcony there. So, you know, there was the veg department, the pastry department, the pan bass, our changing rooms, the staff from the Co-op. They had a staff restaurant. They used to provide meals at lunchtime and on an evening, because the evening would have at that time so many door staff. And we would feed them between 6 and 8 before the function actually got going. So, you know, it was a case of feeding them, and then they'd go on to their duties or what have you.
What kind of food were the staff getting?
Well, it was basics. It wasn't cuisine or anything. It was sausage, egg and chips, fish and chips, all that sort of thing. The evening banquets, the food or dinner dance was something like what you class as chicken a la king, which is a plate with piped mashed potato in a circular form, and we'd pile all those up, and we'd put 3 or 4 or 5 on plate rings, and then put them in the hot plate cold with water in a soup bowl. And then at some point, the hot plate would be lit so that the mashed potato would get hot, and then we would take those plates out of the hot plate, spoon it with chicken a la king, which is like a chicken in a cream sauce, bit of garnish, some vegetables, and out it would go. And of course, we did have gammon and steak and what have you, and fish and chips and what have you. But certainly a dinner dance situation, it was mostly chicken a la king or that sort of thing.
Is there any other dishes what really stand out to you?
Trifles. We used to make individual trifles. Melon cocktail. So melon cocktail in a champagne glass, dipped in coloured sugar, grapefruit cocktail, and then we would put the cocktail in that, and then out they would go, and of course it would look like, which it would, in different colours, green cochineal, green, red, whatever, around the edge of the glass, which would be sugar coated, you see, so give it a bit of flair.
And do you have any particular memories then of your time working there? What really stand out to you?
Well, apart from going on the Swedish passenger ship, and you know, it's the opening days of saying this is the real world of working for a living, doing the 60 hours. But you know, we were all guys together, all ladies for that matter, because there were some apprentice ladies as well who went in the pastry department. So they're all sort of, they've got memories there, and the photographs are there as well. So yeah, it's good. Good time.
How did you feel when you first started then? Because it must have been interesting, you know, going
straight. Well, daunting. I mean, you had to fight for your own laundry stuff, because I was not the biggest person in any shape or form. Some were larger than me, some were taller than me. So you had to fight for your own laundry, and you had, you put your laundry in, but you wouldn't necessarily get your own laundry back, because the laundry came back so many days, the laundry was sent off, you see. So we would get ours back clean, starched and what have you, but when you get your laundry back, it'll be my name on the bag, but it wouldn't necessarily be mine. I could have trousers 3 foot longer than I am, you know. But that was the way it was. You just swapped around. But it was very good, yeah. Very, very good camaraderie and what have you. And good banter. It's very good.
In terms of looks-wise and everything, so the photos here, bits and pieces. So did it change ever at all when you were there? Or was it exactly the same as... Did it stay the same right the way throughout?
Well, I went to visit about twice, I think, after I came off the ship, because I was local, you see. Coming into Hull, so I went to visit and see what the guys the girls were up to. And of course, whether there was, well, that could have been me, but it wasn't, unfortunately. As I said, it was a crazy situation. We used to go down to the pantry to have a look if there was enough soused herrings, because that's what we were making under Ingrid. Meatballs, herrings in tomato sauce, gherkins, Russian salad, potato salad. We made all those upstairs under Ingrid, and then went downstairs. But when Ingrid left, I think that left a great big hole in the situation, that whether they, you know, decided not to carry down, I swear I don't know they did, but obviously the camaraderie is that they're still there, but one or two obviously went off to do other things, finished working at college or getting the training, getting the City Guilds, and went on to other things. But, you know, it was great. Great. I've got very happy thoughts of being there for 3 years, that was. Yeah. And I'm sure that they had longer and happy thoughts as well.
Did you leave at the same time as Ingrid then, or did she leave?
I left shortly after. Basically, when she came on, she came to visit, and one of the first things, as I said, she said, you know, would you like a job? And she said, will you go see this gentleman at Ellen Wilson line? Yeah, no problem, so I'll go down there. Went to see the visit and saw the personnel man, and he said, yeah, no problem. He said, you can start work on the Spiro on Monday. No, I don't think, I'm not here for the Spiro, I'm here for the Saga. Never left it, sorry, I'm going. So I went back to my job, hadn't left by then. Ingrid came again, and this time she said, in again unbroken English, as she must have done, you know, do you still want to go on the Saga? Yeah, I do. Right, taxi, 3 o'clock. Going on the ship, see the chef man, took him my credentials. He said, don't bother with that. He said, in Swedish, more or less, get in that kitchen, start on Monday. If you can't work in that kitchen, I will see it. So I was in the same ship for 5 years. Brilliant time.
Amazing.
So, yes, it was, you know, a happy time, but maybe the people that were still there thought, well, it could have been me, but it wasn't, you know, it's just one of those things.
Out of interest, when you were on the ship to Sweden and everything, was that, how long were you away for?
Well, basically, it was only overnight. We left Hull on the, say, on the Sunday night. We classed it as one day at sea, then the following Tuesday morning we'd be in Sweden, in Gothenburg, so it just went back and forwards. So for a whole month or 2 months or what have you. And then eventually we moved down to Tilbury, and we sailed out of Tilbury direct to Sweden. But much the same thing, you know, out in the evening, one day at sea, then the following morning in Sweden, leave Sweden on the night time, day at sea, and then back in Tilbury. So 5 years of that, brilliant time.
I guess coming back to any one thing, I was just interested in more than anything. It says outside catering.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, they used to do outside catering, but we never sort of saw a great deal over it. I think it was just one of those things that they would do something with the outside catering. I mean, the gentleman who was the head chef, Dave Roberts, but there was a gentleman over him who was an Irish gentleman called Mr. Tisdale. And we actually only ever saw him in his whites about half a dozen times in the 3 years that I was there. So for whatever reason at that time, the head chef or the catering manager walked through the kitchen, but he never seen me in whites. We had all the other people that was working there, so we wore our whites. But he was, on the odd occasion he was there, but never in his whites.
Amazing.
So, but that's the way it was.
Is there any of the chefs that really stand out to you then?
Well, Betty Barefield was one of a twin sister. She worked in the pastry department. And Mark Howell, if you like, we pinched a little bit of a bench from her, where we did the food for the Scallop Pantry, i.e. the Swedish stuff. And she was a real stickler, but she was brilliant, you know. And there were other people as well, Dave Roberts, Ruth Foster, who I've never seen since I left, I don't know. She was like a mother chick to all the sons. But all the staff really got on really well. Of course, there were some young ladies that was waitresses in the restaurant on a daily basis who had, quite bonny. And you know, there's one or two other young ladies who worked in the pastry department, who were Gwen Glover and one of the other girls. So basically, at the end of the day, if you crossed over, shall we say, hang on a minute, you're not doing that in here. There was the gentleman who used to run what we call the pan bash, which is where all the pans go. I mean, his name was, I was trying to think of his name, Mike Busby. But his nickname was Eli for some reason or other. And you didn't cross him, you know, if you put a pan in and he hadn't, say he might have burnt it, which he shouldn't have done, but maybe he burnt it. You put the man in and if you didn't get out quick enough, this pan was coming straight back at you. You know, cleaning that pan or whatever. But yeah, it was all good banter, it was all good fun.
So I'm guessing you would have been very young, but do you remember the co-op being built or anything?
No. I was born, do you know when the National Health started? The National Health started on the 5th of July, 1948. And I was born the 4th of July, 1948. And because I was born the day before National Health started, my mother had to pay for me to be born, shall we say. Whereas post the 5th. So basically, at the end of the day, the co-op was there, but it was just one of the restaurants to go in, basically. It was one of the biggest restaurants, obviously, locally within the town district. And maybe directly opposite there was one of the first Chinese restaurants in Hull, which was above the Fletcher's shop. There used to be a fountain there, and you know, it was nice to go in. At that time, one of the first Chinese restaurants before everybody else took on. So, yeah, it was good.
Wasn't there further construction on that as it went on? Is that right? In terms of the co-op?
I thought it was an entity in itself, really. But there was Thornton Valleys behind it,
yeah.
Which was the old shop, which became Edwin Davis's.
Because I was under the impression that in 1963, the mural got erected on the front.
I always remember it being there. So whether it was just assembled before I got there, but I always remember it being there as an apprentice chef. Because obviously, you met other chefs at on day release at Hull College, and they might work in, shall we say, the Station Hotel, Royal Station Hotel, or what have you. And one of the gentlemen, I can't remember his name, but he used to go to work in a suit. He was one of the chefs at Royal Station Hotel. But I always remember that mural being there all the time. And, of course, the Skyline Pantry was round at the time. And, again, I always remember that being there, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was, something I blocked out. Because we went in the trade, the staff entrance, you see. So we went down Jarrett Street round the back. So we weren't allowed to go in through the front entrance, unless we weren't working, of course. But as far as I know, I remember it there, but I don't remember actually what year it was put together.
And do you have any memories of the co-op then? The actual, you know, the shop in terms of down below?
Yeah, I mean, the shop itself was obviously, when you're not working, you could actually go around the shop and, shall we say, have a look at the furniture or the clothes or what have you. But as I say, as a realisation place, we got a Thursday afternoon off, which where we went in to see to get our wages or to see if our wages were in a brown envelope. And then before we went to that, we went to a little restaurant, a cafe in Jameson Street, which was at the time called Pioneer Cafe. And that became the first one in Hull with the burgers, Yankee Burger. Yankee Land is what it was, or Yankee Burger, and that place was buzzing every day when you could get near it with a quarter pounder burgers, which was unknown. But prior to that, it was Pioneer Cafe. So on a Thursday afternoon, we would go in, get our wages, and then go on that, you know, we could have a float around the court, but invariably we didn't spend a lot of time there.
No.
So being young lads, you know, we might have looked at the clothes wearing, but it was a bit how our league price was.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
There's lots of people that I've put on name of all the staff that I remember. But basically, at the end of the day, it's strange that I don't really come across them. Not that, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, one of Mike Swaber, I bump into him now and again, Val Cross, that was a maiden name. She married and called, now Val Smith. I see her occasionally and Dave Roberts and one of the other waitering staff, Mary Tergus, I bump into her now and again. But for all those people that I actually work with, it's strange that you don't bump into more of them over a period of time. But, you know, maybe they moved on. And one of the young lads that was working on that photograph, he actually went into the Royal Navy, as far as I know. But I don't know beyond that. Yeah, so. But, yeah, it's good fun. And I really enjoyed working there. And, you know, long may it continue. If the tall ships can be there and somebody just realised that it says all on it, but I knew that a long while ago. But if that could remain there, that would be wonderful as a feature for Hull. Yeah, it'd be good.
No, definitely. I mean, what does the mural mean to you then?
Well, it's part of my history, isn't it? So it's part of my workforce. I mean, my workplace. So basically, at the end of the day, if there was to knock it down, we're quite sad, really. But whether it can be kept as part of the new ongoing, because you have to progress. But I think you need a bit of history there, and that is history from the 60s, early 60s anyway. So, as I said, I went there in 63, and it was there then, as far as I know. But no, it needs to be kept there if at all possible. It needs to be involved in that. And of course, the Skyline Ballroom became Bailey's. As a youngster, when I got the money on the ship, then me and my girlfriend at the time and our wife went to Bailey's and enjoyed in the night spot because it had all been changed. Oh, the Understart Cup. They tried to do lots of things with it, like a market, what have you, but it didn't really work out. But when it was Bailey's, you know, obviously it was again a young scene. Cubicles, every table had an electric lamp on it. Waitress service to your drink, so you don't have to go to the bar. So lots of happy memories, even beyond the Bailey's and that sort of thing.
So how did it change that, out of interest, when it went from Skyline to Bailey's then, visually?
Well, it changed. Well, it was the top floor, basically, again, wasn't it, the restaurant. They revamped it. But one of the major problems was the staircase coming out. Because where you've got the lift, as you come out, if it was possible for you to go into the lift in the Cope now and go to the top floor, Skyline Restaurant was there, became Bailey's, and so on and so on. But there was a staircase that came down alongside the lift. Unfortunately, the staircase was open plan. If there was ever an altercation with somebody, fisticuffs, one of them could have ended up right at the bottom of that staircase, going through three floors. So I think they had to do lots of things from that to try and block that off. So it was progress. Whether progress in the right way or not, I don't know.